gentlemen, the Armed Forces Radio Service invites you to listen to the Theater Guild on the air. Tonight we bring you for the first time on the air the spectacular success of the London and New York stage, The Winslow Boy, with the original cast including Frank Allenby, Alan Webb, Valerie White, and Michael Newell. And here is Roger Pryor to tell you about our play and our players.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's Theater Guild on the air production is news, real news. We bring you two radio firsts. One, Terence Rattigan's fine play, The Winslow Boy, with the original London and Broadway cast, will be heard on the air for the first time. And two, this will be the first time a smash hit of the London and Broadway stage has concluded its engagement with a coast-to-coast broadcast. Presented by the Theater Guild, John C. Wilson, and H.M. Tennant on the Broadway stage, The Winslow Boy received the New York Drama Critics Award and was named one of the Burns Mantle 10 Best Plays. In addition to the unanimous critical acclaim of London and New York, this play and the players you'll hear tonight won the applause of your fellow Americans in 25 cities during the triumphant nationwide tour that ended this Friday. Now, with a radio adaptation by Leslie Reed, we raise the curtain on the 899th and final American performance of The Winslow Boy. Summer day in 1911 at the Royal Naval College at Osborne in England. Osborne, where naval cadets were trained as they are in America at Annapolis, but much younger. Boys of 13 like Ronnie Winslow, who that day was in serious trouble.
And defaulter, halt! Cadet Winslow is here, sir.
Very good. Withdraw your escort.
Aye, aye, sir.
Cadet Ronald Arthur Winslow.
Sir?
You will proceed forthwith by train to your home in London. You will deliver this letter to your father, informing him of what you've done.
I didn't do it, sir. It wasn't me. Silence, boy.
You have stolen money from one of your comrades, and there's no more to be said. You are, of course, expelled from the Royal Naval College.
So it all began. And in the 2 years that were to follow expulsion from Osborne, just before the First World War, the name of Winslow became the name of a highly controversial cause. According to some, a gallant fight for individual liberty. According to others, a ridiculous attempt to embarrass the British government. The Winslows were a middle-class London family of five, with a pleasant house and garden in South Kensington. Ronnie had a brother, Dickie, an Oxford undergraduate, and a sister, Catherine, in her late 20s.
At that time, I was much interested in politics and the women's suffrage movement, but there was also John Weatherstone, an army officer.
Do you love John, Kate? Really love him?
Yes, I do, Mother.
I don't think you modern girls have the feelings our generation did. You don't behave as if you were in love. It's this new woman attitude.
Very well, Mother. I love John in every way that a woman can love a man. And far, far more than he loves me. Does that satisfy you?
Well, really, Kate.
Well now, Weatherstone, I understand you wish to marry my daughter.
Of course, Mr. Winslow.
Why, of course. There are plenty of people about who don't wish to marry her. However, we won't quibble. We'll take the sentimental side of the project for granted. Now, as regards the more practical aspect, your income, can you live on it?
No, sir. I'm in the regular army. But my pay is supplemented by an allowance from my father.
So I understand. Well, that all seems perfectly satisfactory. I really don't think I need delay my congratulations any longer.
Thank you, sir, very much.
Now, as regards Catherine's affairs, I'm afraid she's not, just in case you thought otherwise, the daughter of a rich man.
I didn't think otherwise, sir.
I had to retire from the Westminster Bank because of my arthritis. They pay me a small pension, and my wife has a little money of her own. Altogether, my total income is approximately £800 per annum.
I see.
I also have to maintain two sons, one at Osborne, the other at Oxford, neither of whom, I'm afraid, will be in a position to support themselves for some time to come. One because of his extreme youth, and the other because of other reasons which I must attend to this moment, if you'll excuse me. Dickie!
Oh, yes, Father?
What is that cacophonous hullabaloo?
My gramophone, Father. I'm just playing the bunny hug.
The what?
The new dance. It's like the turkey trot, only more dignified.
Well, whatever animal is the inspiration of that savage disturbance, will you stop it immediately?
Yes, Father.
Now, John, where was I? Oh, yes. Well, now, I propose to settle on Catherine 1/6 of my total capital.
I call that very generous, sir.
Not as generous as I would have liked, I'm afraid. Well, that's all, I think. Now there's a bottle of Madeira in the cellar that seems indicated at this moment.
Darling Kate.
Was it an ordeal, John?
I was scared to death. And the annoying thing was that I had a whole lot of neatly turned phrases and he wouldn't let me use them.
Anything about loving me a little?
That I thought we could take for granted. So did your father, incidentally.
What about your father? He disapproves of me, doesn't he? He has a way of looking at me through his monocle that shrivels me up.
He's just being a colonel, darling, that's all. Anyway, what about the way your father looks at me? Are all your family as scared of him as I am?
Well, Dickie is, of course. And Ronnie. Though there's no reason why he should be. Father worships him. I'm not scared of him. Ever.
You're not scared of anything, are you?
Oh, yes, heaps of things. Oh, heavens, we've got Desmond to lunch. I'd forgotten. That must be him.
Who?
Desmond Curry, our family lawyer. Oh, darling, do be polite to him, won't you?
Why am I usually so rude to your guest?
No, but he doesn't know about us yet.
Who does?
Yes, but he's been in love with me for years. It's a family joke.
Mr. Curry, miss.
Well, come in, Desmond. Beastly wet day, isn't it?
Hello, Catherine. I trust I'm not early.
No, dead on time, Desmond, as always. I don't think you know John Weatherstone.
No, but of course I've heard a lot about him.
How do you do?
How do you do? Well, well, well. I hear I must congratulate you both.
Desmond, how do you know?
Violet told me just now. Yes, I must congratulate you both.
Thank you so much, Desmond, dear.
Thank you, Mr. Curry.
Of course, it was quite expected, I know. Quite expected. Still, it was rather a surprise hearing it like that.
Well, you're the first person to hear it, Desmond.
Am I? Am I indeed? Well, I'm sure you'll both be very happy. Fancy, only this morning. If you'll excuse me, Kate, I'll go and pay my respects to Mr. Winslow.
All right, Desmond. He's in the study.
Bit of a stick, isn't he?
He's very nice, darling, and a good friend.
What's that?
Kate. Why, Ronnie. What on earth are you doing here? Well, you're wet through.
I've been in the garden. I was hiding.
But, Ronnie, what's happened? What are you doing here? We weren't expecting you from Osborne until Tuesday.
I know. Is Father home?
I'll go and tell him, shall I?
No, don't. Please, Kate, don't. He mustn't see me.
Now, what's the trouble, darling?
Kate, I want to talk to you. Please, before Father comes.
I'll disappear, Kate.
In the dining room, do you mind? Now, darling, tell me. What is it? Have you run away?
No. I brought this letter. Read it, Kate. We could tell Father term had ended 2 days early. I didn't do it. They wouldn't believe me. They had me out before the commander.
Oh, Ronnie.
Kate, I didn't steal the money. Really, I didn't.
No, darling. But this letter's addressed to Father. Did you open it?
Yes. I was going to tear it up. I didn't know what to do.
Oh, hello, Ronnie, old lad. How's everything?
Dickie, something's happened. You stay here with him. I'll find Mother.
Oh, what's up, old chap?
Nothing.
Have you been kicked out?
Yes.
Oh, bad luck. What for?
I didn't do it.
Oh, no, of course you didn't. I don't know yet what it is they've kicked you out for.
Stealing.
Oh, is that all? Good Lord, I didn't know they kicked chaps out for that these days.
Mother!
there, Ronnie, darling. It's all right now.
I didn't do it, Mother.
No, of course you didn't. We'll go upstairs now, shall we, and get out of these nasty wet clothes.
Don't tell Father.
No, darling, not yet, I promise. Come along now. Your new uniform, too. What a shame.
I say, Kate, who is going to break the news to the old man?
Well, don't let's worry about that now, Dickie.
Well, you can count me out. In fact, I don't want to be within 1,000 miles of that explosion.
Why on earth didn't they let us know? Just think what that poor little creature's been going through down there, John. Entirely alone. I tell you, I'd like to have that commanding officer here for just 2 minutes.
Hey, darling, it's quite natural you should feel angry about it. But you must remember the boys in the service, and they're always scrupulously fair. If they said he stole this money and then took this step, you can take it from me, there must have been a very full inquiry.
Perhaps you're right.
How will your father take it?
It might kill him.
No.
He's coming.
We might allow ourselves a little modest celebration before luncheon. Put the glasses down, Violet, please. Where's Mrs. Winslow?
She'll be down in a minute, sir.
How's your cricket, Desmond?
Not very good, Dickie. I've strained my shoulder, you know.
Well, why do you play these ridiculous games of yours? Resign yourself to the onrush of middle age and abandon them, my dear Desmond.
Oh, I could never do that, sir. Not give up cricket, not altogether.
Excuse me, Mr. Curry.
Yes, Mr. Weathers?
Are you any relation of D.W.H. Curry, who used to play for Middlesex?
I am D.W.H. Curry.
Oh, didn't you know we had a great man in the room, Weatherstone?
Gosh, do you know you used to be a schoolboy hero of mine? D.W.H. Curry in person. Well, I'd never have thought it.
I know. Very few people would nowadays. I'm just another lawyer.
Ah, Grace, just in time.
I'm so sorry I've kept you all waiting.
Now then, has everybody got a glass? Violet, we mustn't leave you out. You must join this toast.
Oh, well, thank you, sir. Oh, just a sip, please. Oh, and I brought another glass for Master Ronnie, sir.
Master Ronnie isn't due back from Osborne until Tuesday, Violet.
Oh, no, sir. He's back already, the poor lamb. Came back unexpected this morning.
All right, Violet. You can go.
Yes, ma'am.
Grace, what does this mean?
We all thought it best you shouldn't know. Only for the time being, Arthur.
Is the boy very ill? Answer me, someone. Is the boy very ill?
No, Father. He's not ill.
Then what is it? Surely I'm entitled to know.
He brought this letter for you, Arthur.
Read it to me, please.
Arthur, not in front of...
Read it to me, please.
Confidential. I am commanded by my Lord's Commissioners of the Admiralty to inform you that they have received a communication from the commanding officer of the Royal Naval College at Osborne reporting the theft of a 5-shilling postal order at the college on the 7th instant, which was afterwards cashed at the post office. Investigation of the circumstances of the case leaves no other conclusion possible than that the postal order was taken by your son, Cadet Ronald Arthur Winslow. My lords deeply regret that they must therefore request you to withdraw your son from the college. It's signed by someone. I can't quite read his name.
Perhaps you would all go into luncheon. Grace, would you take them in? And please tell him I want to see him.
Arthur, please don't. Please don't.
Well, what mustn't I do?
Please don't forget that he's only a child.
Please tell him I want to see him at once. Come in. Come in, Ronnie, and shut the door. Why are you wearing a dressing gown?
My uniform got wet.
How did it get wet?
I was out in the garden in the rain.
Why?
I was hiding.
Do you remember once you promised me that if ever you were in trouble of any sort, you would come to me first?
Yes, Father, but
now I don't want you to say anything until you've heard what I've got to say. I shan't be angry with you, Ronnie, provided you tell me the truth. But if you tell me a lie, I shall know it. Because a lie between you and me can't be hidden. I shall know it, Ronnie. So remember that before you speak. Did you steal this postal order?
No, Father, I didn't.
D. Did you steal this postal order?
No, Father, I didn't.
All right. Go on back to bed. And in future, I trust that a son of mine will have enough common sense to come in out of the rain.
Yes, Father.
Desmond, would you come here a moment?
Yes, Mr. Winslow.
Desmond, this is a matter for you. I want you to tell me the law on this. We've a fight on our hands.
Ah. Come in, Mr. Winslow. Sit down, please. I'm sorry that you've had this long trip.
Oh, forget my wretched health, man. What's the news?
Well, they've refused us again, Mr. Winslow. The Admiralty will not grant us an inquiry.
It's iniquitous, Desmond. To condemn a boy without a hearing, if the Admiralty won't do anything, can't we appeal to the civil court?
You know, Mr. Winslow, I'll do everything I can to help. Ronnie is your son and Catherine's brother.
There must be a way.
It's monstrous, Mr. Winslow. Ruining a boy's character without the chance to defend himself.
But I won't give up. I shall go on demanding a trial in open court until the conscience of the nation compels the government to yield.
And for months, Father struggled on, in the teeth of Mother's discouragement.
Why, Arthur, why? Ron is perfectly happy in his new school.
In the teeth of his doctor's advice.
You must take a complete rest, Mr. Winslow. If you don't, I will not answer for you. Good day.
I've been asking myself a question, Kate. Shall we drop the whole thing?
I don't consider that a serious question, Father.
Oh, Kate, you're my only ally. Without you, I believe I would have given up long ago.
Nonsense.
It's true. Very well, then. Let us pin our faith to Sir Robert Morton. He will be here soon with Desmond.
Oh, don't let's discuss Sir Robert Morton again, Father. It's too late, anyway.
It's not too late. He hasn't accepted the case yet.
Then I'm afraid I hope he never does.
And he won't, unless he's satisfied of Ronnie's innocence. Everyone says Morton's the best advocate in the country, the best man to plead in court. Just as nobody could be better than Desmond at all the preliminary investigations.
Oh, Morton's the most fashionable advocate. And if one happens to be fighting any change or progress, he is the best.
I believe you're prejudiced because he spoke in the House of Commons against women's suffrage.
I am. I'm prejudiced because he's always speaking against what is right and just.
Still, I have an instinct about Morton. We'll see which is right. My instinct or your reason, eh?
I'm afraid we will.
And soon afterwards, Sir Robert Morton himself arrived with Desmond Curry to decide whether he would accept the case. Sir Robert then was in his early 40s, cadaverous and immensely elegant. He carried a top hat and stick and was wearing a long black overcoat, which he kept on as he sat bolt upright on a hard chair. I thought he looked a fop, and his expression was supercilious.
You won't forget the time, Curry.
Oh, no, Sir Robert. Sir Robert has a most important dinner engagement, Kate. With the Duke and Duchess of Devonshire, in fact. Perhaps I'd better advise your father of our presence, Kate.
Yes, do, Desmond. You'll find him in his bedroom, having his back rubbed.
Oh, I see. I'll go and tell him.
Is there anything I can get you, Sir Robert? Whiskey and soda?
No, thank you.
Will you smoke?
No, thank you.
I hope you don't mind me smoking.
Why should I?
Well, some people find it shocking.
A lady in her own home is surely entitled to behave as she wishes.
Sir Robert, I was in court during your cross-examination of Len Rogers in the trades union embezzlement case.
Really?
I suppose you heard that he committed suicide a few months ago.
Yes, I had heard.
Many people believed him innocent, you know.
So I understand. As it happens, however, he was guilty.
Sir Robert, we are so sorry to have kept you.
It's perfectly all right, Mrs. Winslow. How do you do?
Sir Robert, I am Arthur Winslow.
How do you do?
Now, please sit down. I expect you will wish to examine my son.
Just a few questions. I fear that is all I will have time for this evening.
I am rather sorry to hear that. He has made the journey, especially from school, for this interview. And I was hoping that by the end of it, I should know definitely yes or no if you would accept the brief.
If a further examination should prove necessary, it will have to be sometime next week.
I see.
I've been telling Mr. Winslow, you think it might be possible to proceed by petition of right, Sir Robert.
What is a petition of right, Desmond?
Well, under ordinary circumstances, a person can't sue the Crown. Oh, that is the government, what the law calls the government. However, in some cases, an action can be brought by petition of right, in which you ask for redress as a favor. If it's granted, the custom is for the Attorney General, on behalf of the King, to endorse the petition and allow the case to come to court.
It is interesting to note that the exact words he uses on such occasions are, let right be done.
Let right be done. I like that phrase, Sir Robert.
It has a certain ring about it, has it not? Let right be done.
Ah, this is my son, Ronald. Ronnie, this is Sir Robert Morton.
How do you do, sir?
Ronnie stood at a table facing Sir Robert. Mother, father, Desmond and I all sat and listened intently. Sir Robert began by quietly asking Ronnie his age, and then about the events of the previous July 7th. The day when the postal order had been stolen at Osborne.
All right, sir. Well, just before dinner, at 1 o'clock, I asked the chief petty officer to let me have some money, 15 and 6, out of what I had in the college bank.
Why did you do that?
I wanted to buy an air pistol.
An air pistol? And how much money did you have in the college bank at the time?
£2 and 3 shillings.
So you see, sir, what incentive could there possibly be for the boy to steal 5 shillings?
Mr. Winslow, I must ask you to be good enough not to interrupt me. After you had withdrawn the 15 and 6, what did you do?
I had dinner. Then I went to the locker room and put the money in my locker.
And then?
I got permission to go to the post office. Then I went to the locker room again, got out my money, and went to the post office and bought my postal order.
For 15 and 6?
Yes. Afterwards, I met Elliot Minor at college, and he said, I say, isn't it rot? Someone's broken into my locker and pinched a postal order. I've reported it.
I see. Continue.
Well, then, just before study, I was told to see Commander Flower. The woman from the post office was there, and the commander said, is this the boy? And she said, it might be. I can't be sure. They all look so much alike.
You see, she couldn't identify him.
Please. Go on.
Then she said, I only know that the boy who bought a postal order for 15 and 6 was the same boy who cashed one for 5 shillings. Then they made me write Elliot Miner's name on an envelope and compared it to the signature on the 5 shilling postal order. Then they sent me to the sanatorium, and 10 days later I was sacked. I mean, expelled.
I see. Did you cash a postal order belonging to Elliot Minor for 5 shillings?
No, sir.
Did you break into his locker and steal it?
No, sir.
And that is the truth? The whole truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
Right. Now, when the commander asked you to write Elliot's name on an envelope, how did you write it? With Christian name or initials?
I wrote Charles K. Elliot.
What made you choose that particular form?
That was the way he usually signed his name.
How did you know?
Well, he was a great friend of mine.
That is no answer. How did you know?
Well, I'd seen him sign things.
In other words, he showed you exactly how he wrote his signature.
Well, yes, I suppose he did.
You suppose he did. Did you practice writing it yourself?
I might have done.
Ronnie, you never told me that.
It was only for a joke, Father.
Never mind whether it was for a joke or not. The fact is you practiced forging Elliot's signature.
I say, which side are you on?
Don't be impertinent. Do you know that Mr. Ridgely Pierce, the greatest handwriting expert in England, has affirmed that there was no doubt that the signature on the postal order and the signature you wrote on the envelope were by one and the same hand?
They were not.
In other words, Mr. Ridgely Pierce doesn't know his job.
Well, he's wrong, anyway.
Wasn't the real reason you went into the locker room because you knew you would be alone there at that time?
No, no.
What time did Elliot put his postal order in his locker?
I don't know. I didn't even know he had a postal order. He didn't tell me.
How very secretive of him. What did you do after leaving the locker room?
I can't remember.
Perhaps you were still in the locker room rifling Elliot's locker.
So, Robert, I must ask
you... What?
I remember now. I remember someone did see me outside the CEO's office. A chap called Casey. I remember I said, come down to the post office with me. I'm going to cash a postal order.
Cash a postal order?
I mean get.
You said cash. Why did you say cash if you meant get?
I don't know. You're muddling me.
You seem easily muddled. How many other lies have you told?
None, really, I haven't.
I suggest your whole testimony is a lie.
No, it's the truth.
I suggest there is barely one single word of truth in anything you have said either to me or to the judge advocate or to the commander. I suggest that you broke into Elliot's locker, that you stole the postal order for 5 shillings belonging to Elliot, and that you cashed it by means of forging his name.
I didn't.
Now listen. I suggest that you did it for a joke, meaning to give Elliot his 5 shillings back. But when he said he had reported the matter, you got frightened and decided to keep quiet. Is that true?
No, it isn't true.
It is true. And I suggest that by continuing to deny your guilt, you are causing great hardship to your own family and considerable annoyance to a high and important person in this country.
That's a disgraceful thing to say.
I agree.
I suggest that the time has at last come for you to undo some of the misery you have caused by confessing to us all now that you are a forger, a liar, and a thief.
I'm not. I didn't do it. Mother.
This is outrageous,
Ronnie,
sir.
Ronnie, darling, it's all right. Don't cry, Ronnie. Come upstairs with me.
Can I drop you anywhere, Curry? My motor car is at the door.
No, I thank you, Sir Robert.
Well, send all these papers round to my chambers tomorrow morning, will you?
But will you need them now?
Oh, yes. The boy is plainly innocent. I accept the case.
Before the First World War, a 13-year-old cadet, Ronnie Winslow, was expelled from the Royal Naval College at Osborne on the charge that he had stolen a 5-shilling postal order. The case aroused great public interest and notoriety. Articles in the newspapers, discussions everywhere. They even began singing a song about the Winslows in the music halls.
Just you wait and see. They're burning their boats at the Admiralty. Will Winslow in on Morton's fee? Just you wait and see. Hee hee. Just you wait and see.
Sir Robert Morton, the most famous counsel in England, had accepted my father's request to represent us. I was curious to know why he had been so sure of Ronnie's innocence after one examination.
3 things, Miss Winslow. First of all, he made far too many damaging admissions. A guilty person would have been much more careful and on his guard. Secondly, I laid him a trap. And thirdly, I left him a loophole. Anyone who was guilty would have fallen into the one and darted through the other. He did neither.
The trap was to ask him suddenly what time Elliot put the postal order in his locker, wasn't it?
Yes.
And the loophole?
The loophole, Miss Winslow, was when I suggested to him that he had stolen the postal order for a joke, which, had he been guilty, he would surely have admitted to as being the lesser of two evils.
I see. It was very cleverly thought out.
Thank you, Miss Winslow.
I want to ask you a question, Dickie. It's about betting.
Oh, but Father, I've given up betting. I promised you.
All the same, what do you suppose one of your bookmaker friends would lay in the way of odds against your getting a degree at Oxford?
Oh, well, let's think, Father. Well, say about evens.
I rather doubt if at that price your friend would find many takers.
Well, about 7-4 against. You don't want to have a bet, do you?
No, Dickie. I'm not a gambler, and that's exactly the trouble. Unhappily, I'm no longer in a position to gamble £200 a year on what you yourself admit is an outside chance.
You want me to leave Oxford?
Is that it?
I'm afraid so, Dickie.
It's Ronnie's case, I suppose.
It's costing me a lot of money. I'm afraid this is rather a shock for you. I'm sorry. But unfortunately, Kate, even Dickie's sacrifice is not enough.
Poor old Dickie.
I've just managed to keep your father from dismissing Violet. After 24 years.
Oh, Violet must stay, Father. We can't do without her.
Especially now when the doctor wants you to stay in a wheelchair.
Oh, the doctor. Then you realize, Kate, your marriage settlement must go too.
Oh, yes. I gave that up for lost weeks ago.
It won't make any difference between you and John, will it?
Oh, good heavens, no.
Oh, I wish I could see the sense of it all. What is to become of our lives, Arthur? Our quiet, happy home. Some sort of future for us and our children.
I know exactly what I'm doing, Grace.
I can only pray that you do. Ron is perfectly happy at a good school. No one need ever have known about Osborne if you hadn't gone and shouted it out to the whole world. I've asked you and Kate to tell me 100 times. For what, Arthur?
For right, Grace.
Are you sure it isn't just plain pride and sheer brute stubbornness? You're destroying your health and your family, too.
I'm sorry, Grace, but I'm going to publish my son's innocence before the world. And for that end, I am not prepared to weigh the cost.
And one night, a week later, I sat in the ladies' gallery of the House of Commons, listening to Sir Robert and the First Lord of the Admiralty in a debate.
And therefore, sir, I stand by those words which are the sum and essence of many a struggle for liberty in this realm. In those words lies the strength of our claim. Let right be done.
Mr. Speaker, sir, I have been as moved as any honourable member opposite by the resonant use made by the right honourable and learned gentleman, Sir Robert Morton, of his theme, Let Right Be Done.
Hear, hear.
Nevertheless, Cadet Ronald Winslow is or was a servant of the Crown, and has no more right than any other member of His Majesty's forces to sue the government in open court.
Hello, Father. Where's Mother?
She went to bed. Well, Kate, is the debate over? Is the First Lord going to allow us a fair trial?
Apparently not.
So we're back where we started, then.
It looks like it.
It's iniquitous to think that we're not even allowed to go into court. Didn't Sir Robert make any protest?
Not a verbal protest. Something far more spectacular and dramatic. He suddenly got up, glared at the First Lord, threw a whole bundle of notes on the floor and stalked out of the house. If I hadn't known, I could have sworn he was genuinely indignant.
You're very ungrateful to him, considering all he's done for us.
I'm not ungrateful, Father. Sir Robert's fought wonderfully. But all the same, the man's a fish. A hard, cold-blooded, supercilious, sneering fish.
Sir Robert Morton's here, sir, and this letter's just come for you.
Oh, thank you, Violet. Will you show in, Sir Robert?
Yes, sir.
It's from Colonel Weatherston, Kate.
John's father?
Good evening, Mr. Winslow.
Good evening, Sir Robert. Will you excuse me a moment while I read this?
Certainly. Miss Winslow, I noticed you followed the debate this evening very closely.
Did you know I was in the gallery?
With such a charming hat, how could I have missed you?
Your demonstration during the First Lord's speech was magnificent.
Really? It's a very old trick, you know. It upsets one's opponent most effectively. I've done it many times in the courts. Well, we mustn't be dismayed by the First Lord's latest refusal. We must...
Sir Robert.
Yes?
I don't think, all things considered, that much useful purpose would be served now by going on with the case.
Not go on.
Father, let me read that letter.
Mr. Winslow, I insist that we go on.
Insist we? It is for me alone to judge when the time has come to give up.
Give up? But why give up? In heaven's name, and why?
I have made many sacrifices for this case. Some of them I had no right to make. But there is a limit. I'm sorry, Sir Robert, but the Winslow case is now closed.
Rubbish.
Let me explain, Sir Robert. This letter is from a certain Colonel Weatherstone, who is the father of the man I'm engaged to. In it he says that unless my father drops this whining and reckless agitation, he will exert every bit of influence he has over his son to prevent him marrying me.
Is your fiancé dependent on his father for money?
Well, John gets an allowance. But he can live, we can both live perfectly well without it. It's a pointless ultimatum, and I doubt if John will even be influenced.
Well, sir?
Sir Robert, I'm afraid I can't go back on what I've already said.
Your daughter seems prepared to take the risk.
I am not.
Well, then, you must decide about the case as you wish. That really is a most charming hat, Miss Winslow.
I'm glad you like it.
It seems decidedly unfair for a lady of your political persuasions to adorn herself with such a very feminine allurement. It really looks so awfully like trying to have the best of both worlds.
Mr. Weatherstone's in the office. Says he'd like to have a word with you in private. Most particular.
You wouldn't mind coming into the dining room, would you, Sir Robert?
Not in the least.
Anyhow, Kate, how can you be so sure Ronnie didn't do it?
His innocence or guilt aren't important to me, John. They are to my father, they're not to me. All I care about is that a government department has ignored a fundamental human right and it should be forced to acknowledge it. That's all that's important to me, John, but it's terribly important.
Well, now look. With the European war blowing up and 101 other things that I think you genuinely could call important on its mind, the House of Commons takes a whole day to discuss Ronnie and his bally postal order. Surely, darling, that's enough.
Well, all I know is, John, that if ever the time comes that the House of Commons has so much on its mind that it can't find time to discuss a Ronnie Winslow and his ballet postal order, this country will be a far poorer place than it is now.
Listen, Kate, I'm only telling you what I think is the best course for us to take. If your father continues with the case, my father will do exactly what he threatens.
I see. John, do you want to marry me?
You know I do. Have I ever wavered before?
And we'd have the allowance.
Yes, we would. I'm sorry, but to me that is important too. Well now, what's the answer?
I love you, John. And I want to be your wife.
Well then, that's all I want to know. Darling.
Oh no, John, please.
I was so sure nothing so stupid and trivial could come between us.
No, let me go, John, and answer the telephone, please. Hello? Yes. Will you wait a minute? Sir Robert, someone wants you on the telephone.
Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt.
You didn't. We'd finished our talk.
Yes. Yes, Michael. I'm listening. I see. Go on. That's very interesting. Thank you, Michael. Mr. Winslow.
What is it, Sir Robert?
There's been a most astonishing development in Parliament. My secretary tells me that a member who, quite unknown to me, was interested in the case, got on his feet shortly after 9:30 and delivered one of the most scathing denunciations of a government department ever heard in the House.
What happened?
The First Lord suddenly found himself under attack from all parts of the House. It appears that he has at this moment given an undertaking that he will instruct the Attorney General to endorse our petition of right. The case of Winslow versus the King can now therefore come to court. Well, sir, what are my instructions?
The decision is no longer mine, sir. You must ask my daughter.
Kate, you realize what this means to you and me?
Yes, John.
What are my instructions, Miss Winslow?
Do you need any instructions from me, Sir Robert? Aren't they already on the petition? Doesn't it say, let right be done? And so, after 2 long years, our case finally came to trial. Sir Robert and Desmond Carey, our solicitor, had worked like Trojans. On the third morning, Sir Robert finished his cross-examination of the Osborne postmistress, who was a vital witness for the Crown.
Miss McGregor, what it comes to, then, is this. You very honestly say all these cadets looked alike to you in their uniforms.
Aye, sir.
And therefore you cannot swear positively to my lord and the gentlemen of the jury
that the cadet who cashed Elliot's postal order was Ronald Winslow.
Nay, sir, I wouldn't swear it. I'm a cautious woman.
Thank you, Miss McGregor. I have no further questions, my lord. Perhaps my friend, Mr. Attorney...
If your lordship pleases, I do wish to re-examine the witness. Now, Miss McGregor, are you absolutely positive that the same boy who cashed the 15 and sixpenny postal order also cashed Elliot's 5-shilling one?
Aye, sir. The same boy cashed both. He was such a bonny lad, I took special note of him.
And so you see, Father, that one answer undid all Sir Robert's magnificent cross-examination. I could see those 12 good men and true nodding away to each other.
Oh, dear.
And that's the way it's been all along. First, it looks as if we're winning hands down, and then it seems the Crown can't lose. Of course, Ronnie was splendid, but Sir Robert seems very worried.
I wonder if you were right, Kate. I wonder if we could have had a better man.
No, Father. We couldn't have had a better man.
Ah, you admit that now, do you?
Only that he's the best advocate in England, and for some reason, prestige, I suppose. He seems genuinely anxious to win this case.
You don't like him, do you?
There's nothing in him to like or dislike, Father. I admire him.
Oh, good afternoon.
Hello, Desmond.
Sir, I'm due back in court, but I have a matter of some urgency to communicate to Catherine. I wonder if I might see her alone.
Very well, Desmond. I shall wheel myself off and go and have my lunch.
Kate, I have a question to put to you, which, if I postpone putting until after the verdict, you may, who knows, think is prompted by pity if we lose. Or if we win, your reply may, again, who knows, be influenced by gratitude. Have you any inkling of what my question is, Kate?
Yes, Desmond, I think I have.
Oh.
Oh, I'm sorry. I ought, I know, to have followed the usual practice in such cases and told you I had no inkling whatever.
No, no. Your directness and honesty are two of the qualities I so much admire in you. You see, I know very well what your feelings for me really are, Kate.
You do, Desmond?
Yes, Kate. I know quite well that they've never amounted to very much more than a sort of, well, shall we say friendliness? A warm friendliness, I hope. But no more than that. That's true, isn't it?
Yes, Desmond.
I know, I know. When I was younger, it might perhaps have been a different story. When I played cricket for Middlesex. Perhaps you feel I cling too much to my past athletic prowess. I feel it myself sometimes. The truth is, I've not much else to cling to. Save that and my love for you. The athletic prowess is fading, I'm afraid. But my love for you will never fade.
That was very charmingly said, Desmond.
Don't make fun of me, please, Kate.
I was.
I meant it every word. Whatever you feel or don't feel for me, Kate, whatever you feel for anyone else, I want you to be my wife.
Thank you, Desmond. I'm very grateful to you.
There's no need, Kate. Don't answer me now, I beg you. Think it over for a few days. Now I must hasten back to see Sir Robert. He's a strange man. At times, so cold and distant and...
Fish-like.
Fish-like. Exactly. And yet I happen to know, of course this must on no account go any further, but I happen to know that he's made a very great personal sacrifice in order to bring this case to court.
Sacrifice? Of what? Of another brief?
Oh, no, that's no sacrifice to him, no. He was offered the appointment of Lord Chief Justice. He turned it down simply in order to be able to carry on with the case of Winslow versus the King. Strange are the ways of men, are they not? Goodbye, my dear.
But I trust you haven't accepted him, Kate.
Well, Father, either I marry Desmond and settle down into quite a comfortable,
and not really useless existence. Or else I go on for the rest of my life earning £2 a week as the secretary of the Women's Suffrage Association in the service of a hopeless cause.
Hopeless cause? I've never heard you say that before.
I never felt it before. John's going to get married next month. A general's daughter.
Poor Kate. I'm so sorry. How I've messed up your life, haven't I?
No, Father. Any messing up that's been done has been done by me. If you could go back, Father, and choose again, would your choice be different?
In the face of injustice and tyranny? No, Kate, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think we both knew what we were doing, and we were right to do it.
Dear Kate, thank you. What's that boy shouting?
Oh, any Winslow case, latest.
Doesn't sound to me like latest.
Winslow case resolved!
Result?
But there must be some mistake. Lord, something must have gone wrong.
Winslow case resolved!
Oh, Miss Kate! Mr. Winslow!
Violet, what's happened?
Oh, Miss Kate, what a shame you missed it. Just after they come back from lunch, it all happened. Oh, Mrs. Winslow, she wasn't there, nor Master Ronnie, neither. Oh, the cheering and the shouting and the carrying on. You never heard anything like it in all your life. And Sir Robert, standing there in the court with his wig on crooked and the tears running down his face. Running down his face, the tears were. And I had me hat knocked off. And outside in the street, you couldn't move for the crowd. You said it was all gone. The way they was carrying on. You see, miss, I always said it'd come all right in the end, didn't I?
Yes, Violet, you did.
2 years. All but a month since Master Ronnie come home that day. Oh, there's the door. I must go and answer it.
It would appear, then, that we've won.
Yes, Father. It would appear that we've won.
Sir Robert Morton.
Come in, sir. Come in.
I thought you might like to hear the actual terms of the Attorney General's statement, so I jotted it down for you. I say now, on behalf of the Admiralty, that I accept the declaration of Ronald Arthur Winslow, that he did not write the name on the postal order, that he did not take it, and that he did not cash it, and that consequently he was innocent of the charge which was brought against him 2 years ago.
It is rather hard for me to find the words I should speak to you, Sir Robert.
Pray don't trouble yourself to search for them, sir. Let us take these rather tiresome and conventional expressions of gratitude for granted, shall we? Now, on the question of damages and costs, I fear you are likely still to be left considerably out of pocket.
Never mind, sir. This paper you have brought me is all I have ever asked for.
Why did the Admiralty throw up the case, Sir Robert?
A foregone conclusion once the handwriting expert had been discredited. I knew that we had more than a sporting chance, and no jury in the world would have convicted on the postmistress's evidence.
But this morning you seemed so depressed.
Did I? The heat in the courtroom was very fatiguing, you know.
Oh, Mr. Winslow, there are some gentlemen from the newspapers at the front door. They say they won't go away until you make a statement.
Very well, Violet, thank you.
I'll go and tell them, sir.
I'll help you out, Father.
No, I refuse to meet the press in this ridiculous wheelchair. Get me my stick.
Now, Father, you know what the doctor
said. Get me my stick. Now, my statement. Now, I could say this victory is not mine. It is the people who have triumphed, as they always will triumph, over despotism. How does that strike you, sir? A trifle pretentious, perhaps.
Perhaps. I should say it nonetheless. It'll be very popular.
Perhaps I'd better say what I really feel, which is merely, thank God, we beat 'em. Now to make it to the door.
Miss Winslow, might I be rude enough to ask you for a little of your excellent whiskey?
Of course. Are you feeling all right, Sir Robert?
Just a slight nervous reaction, that's all. Thank you, Miss Winslow.
Sir Robert, I'm afraid I have entirely misjudged your attitude towards this case. And if in so doing, I have ever appeared to you to be either rude or ungrateful, I am sincerely and humbly sorry.
My dear Miss Winslow, you've never seemed to me either rude or ungrateful.
My attitude to this case has been the same as yours. A determination to win at all costs.
But haven't you also made a certain sacrifice for this case, Sir Robert? The highest legal honor in England?
The robes of that office would not have suited me. Now, what is more, I fully intend to report Desmond Curry to the Law Society.
No, please don't. Why are you always at such pains to prevent people knowing the truth about you, Sir Robert? Why are you so ashamed of your emotions?
Because as a lawyer, I must necessarily distrust them. Cold, clear logic and buckets of it should be the lawyer's only equipment.
Was it cold, clear logic that made you weep today at the verdict?
Your maid told you that, I suppose. Very well, then, if you must have it, here it is. I wept today because right had been done.
Not justice.
No, not justice. Right.
Oh, I see. Justice is based on cold, clear logic. Buckets of it. But a victory of right seems, for some odd reason, to induce tears in court.
You would make a good advocate, Miss Winslow.
Would I?
Why do you not canonize your feministic impulses towards the law courts and abandon the hopeless cause of women's suffrage?
Because I don't believe it is a hopeless cause. Not anymore.
A pity. A very great pity.
Why, Ronnie.
Kate, I ran all the way. I say, sir, I'm most awfully sorry. I didn't know anything was going to happen.
Ronnie, where were you?
At the pictures.
At the pictures?
I say we won, didn't we?
Yes, we won. Well, Ronald, a fine lot of trouble you caused by going into the locker room alone that day.
Yes, sir.
I trust you enjoyed your smoke.
My smoke? How did you know that?
It's my business to know these things.
I say, sir, don't tell Father, will you? He'd be awfully angry if he knew.
No, I won't tell your father. Well, goodbye, Miss Winslow. In the House of Commons in days to come, I shall look up to the gallery in the hope of catching a glimpse of you in that provocative hat.
You will see me there very often, Sir Robert. But one day, not in the gallery. As a member of the House, across the floor.
I shall look forward to seeing you. Goodbye, Miss Winslow.
Curtain has fallen on the Theater Guild production of The Winslow Boy. Our thanks to our stars, Frank Allenby, Alan Webb, Valerie White, and Michael Newell for their fine performance in tonight's play. Now the Theater Guild Orchestra will play Stomping at the Savoy. Theater Guild on the Air was previously released by ABC, the American Broadcasting Company, for listeners in the United States and rebroadcast for our men and women overseas. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.